this message for you. I'm just going to read the sentence he gave to me. Does that sound good? And about a month, maybe a month and a half ago, he just spoke this to me, this one or two sentences, and I knew I was supposed to preach this here. And so here it is. You're going to get the whole message in two sentences, and then I'm going to talk about it over and over again in different ways for longer than that. There are two narratives about your life that are competing for your agreement. One says, I am a victim. The second says, I am blessed and redeemed. God has been good to me, and I have overcome through God's grace. I'm going to read that again. And this is true. The devil has a narrative about your life that has some truth to it to make it believable. And he really, really, really is always working to try and get you to buy into it. Because if you'll buy into it, it makes you powerless. And it is, I am a victim. And he'll hold up before you the memories over and over again of something bad that you've gone through. Something bad that somebody's done to you. Something bad that you've done to somebody else, and you feel guilty, and it's like, I'm horrible. You know, I'm a slave to sin. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. I'm a glutton. I'm on and on and on. I'm addicted to immorality. I'm this. That means I am a victim. I am powerless to do anything about this. This is who I am, and the enemy wants to sell you that. And people, we buy this all the time. I've bought this lie over and over again, many times in my life. And then the Lord has to get me out of agreement with the lie. I am not a victim. I am an overcomer. You guys, there's a rest of the story. You know, my life is not defined by, yes, I was a slave to sin. But then Jesus helps me overcome sin, and I'm no longer a slave anymore. You guys with me? There is a rest of the story. Yes, bad things have happened to me. Bad things have happened to you. Bad things happen to everybody. God has compassion on that. And he'll draw near to us, and he'll heal us, and he'll love us in our pain and walk with us through the things we're walking through. But ultimately, we have to have a victorious mindset. The gospel mentality is a victorious mindset. Everybody say that with me. The gospel mentality is a victorious mindset. We are not slaves. We are overcomers by the blood of the Lamb. Amen? And so there are two narratives about your life that are competing for your agreement. I am a victim, or I am blessed and redeemed. God is good to me, and I have overcome through God's grace. And so you get to choose who you're going to be. And listen, it's not like you make this choice once in your life and you never have to fight this battle again. How many of you have experienced this? You make the choice, you get victory. Sometimes a few days later, you got to make the choice again, right? And then a few days later, you got to make the choice again. And then maybe you have like, whew, 3 good weeks. It's like, yeah, I got it now. I am in victory. I'll never have to, whew. Then 3 weeks later, you have to make the choice again. And it's like over and over, we exert our will, our faith to agree with Jesus' victory. And when we do that, it becomes a way of life. The Bible says we're transformed by the renewing of our mind. It becomes a way of life. And what ends up happening is we go from being overcome and defeated by sin, overcome and defeated by my past or bad people or bad memories, whatever it is, to living in this place of joyful victory. It's not that we don't have sorrows. It's not that we don't have troubles, you know, it's we do. But still, like the baseline normal for our life is we wake up with joy, we wake up with faith, we wake up with hope, and we overcome that day. You guys with me? So I want to tell you a story. I'm going to talk from the book of Genesis. I want to tell you the story of Joseph. How many of you know the story of Joseph? So I'll just summarize it real quick. Joseph was an amazing man of God, and he was born into a very, 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 very blessed family. He ended up having 12 brothers, okay? and his big family, super blessed family. And his dad was like a very special, highly important guy. His dad's name was Jacob. And God had made a covenant with them. And Jacob, he loved all of his sons, I assume, but he really especially loved Joseph more than all the others. Now, that's not really a good idea as a parent. But the Bible just tells the story, right? The good, the bad, and the ugly of what happened. So, Joseph was like really favored by his dad over all his other brothers. He's one of the youngest. And his other brothers got jealous, naturally. And they're like, man, you know, Joseph, a spoiled little guy. Dad always gives him the good stuff, gives him the easy, which was actually probably a lot of truth to it. You know, they're out working, and Jacob's like hanging out at the home, and he's got a special coat of many colors, this elaborate, ornate coat that his dad made for him that he didn't make for any of the other brothers just because Joseph was his favorite. I mean, it's just like putting a bullseye on your child. But he didn't know that. So he does this, and the brothers get jealous of him. But something happens. God has a calling on Joseph's life. He had a calling on all the 12 brothers, actually. But he spoke to Joseph about Joseph's calling. And Joseph, he's a teenager, right? He's a kid. And he's just excited. He's like, I had a dream from the Lord. And he tells all of his brothers and his dad, which is, in a healthy family, this should be okay, actually. But there wasn't healthy dynamics going on there. And so he shares a dream. He says, guess what? I had this dream. And I'm just going to summarize the meaning of the dream. He says, I was there and I was lifted up and dad and all of my brothers came and bowed down to me. And of course, the jealous brothers are like, who does this punk think he is? Like, what is up with him? Who does he, this arrogant little guy? He's so spoiled. He thinks we're the oldest. He thinks dad, the patriarch's going to bow down to him. Like, who does he think he is? Thing is, the dream was actually from God. It was a true prophecy. And he's just like, oh, I'm going to be awesome someday. All of you guys are going to serve me. It's going to be amazing. The brothers didn't think it was very amazing. The brothers are like, huh? And even the dad was like, okay. But he had the discernment and wisdom to know, like, I think this dream was actually from God. So he just kind of sat on it. You know, he didn't. But the brothers were like, oh, that's the final straw. Like, that's it. You know what I mean? Like, we are so done putting up with this little dude. And so they make an idea. They conspire together against Joseph. And one day they're far away from home, out in the field watching the flocks and their shepherds. And Joseph comes out to them and they say, hey, let's kill him. Let's kill him. And then we'll see, and they actually said this, then we'll see what becomes of his dreams. Let's kill him. How would that make you feel? It's not just some stranger, some bad terrorist guy who's like, let's kill him. Like this impersonal thing. These are your brothers. You grew up with these guys. And it wasn't just one or two of them. All of them together were in on it. And they said, we're going to kill him. And then they have a change of mind, change of plans. At the end, they say, oh, man, this happened because a slave trader basically was just happened to be passing by them on his way to Egypt. So he's like, wait, instead of killing him, let's just give him to the same slave trader. He'll take him away and selling him to the slave market in Egypt. He'd be as good as dead to us. We wouldn't have to hear him anymore, but then we wouldn't have to actually kill him. They're like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. So they take their own brother and they sell him into slavery. And so he goes into slavery. He's sold to a guy named Potiphar, who was like this high-ranking official in the Egyptian government. And Joseph becomes one of just the normal slaves in his household. But God's like, this boy has favor, not just with his daddy, he has favor with me. So God's like, I got my hand of favor on this kid. It doesn't matter where he goes or what happens to him. He's going to be blessed. I will personally see to it. And so he's there, and it's not fun. He's suffering. He's a slave. I imagine he's wrestling through feelings of hatred and betrayal toward his brothers, feelings of concern about, what about my dad? My dad thinks I'm dead. I mean, I'm never going to go home again. Feelings of fear over what's going to happen to me as a slave. What are they going to do to me? What's my life going to be like? You know, I'm sure all these things he's wrestling through, but he overcame all those things. God helped him overcome, and he just tried to be a good worker and serve the best he could, and God blessed everything he touched. And Potiphar realized, he's like, hey, man, this one slave, anything he does, it's like way better than everybody else. God's hand of blessing is on this guy. I'm going to put him in charge of everything in my household so that God ends up blessing everything in my household. Smart guy. And so he does it, and God blesses his entire household. Everything's prospering there. And then one day, Potiphar's wife says, wow, Joseph is a good-looking guy. And she wants to sleep with him. Problem is, she's married, and it was a bad thing, right? And so she's propositioning him, and he's doing the right thing. He's like, no, that's wrong. I'm not going to do it, right? She keeps at it. She just keeps coming after him, and he's like, no, get away from me. Where do I file sexual harassment in this workplace, right? This is wrong. But she keeps coming, and he's like, no. And then finally one day, he's like, it would be wrong. I wouldn't sin against God this way, but I'm not going to sin against your master. He's trusted me with authority over everything in his house. I'm not going to do this to him because he has good character. And then one day, you know, she tries again. He runs away. And so she gets mad, and she's feeling spurned. Rejected, I don't know. She's got issues. But so she accuses him of attempted rape. She's like, oh, that servant, he tried to rape me. What's he thinking? Like, what? No, but what voice does he have? He's a slave. She's the wife of the master. So no one believes him. And then he ends up, the master puts him in, has him chained, it put in prison. So now it's just getting worse. He's in prison. Just, man, if anyone could have said, I am a victim, this guy could have said it. You guys with me? If he could have just said, you know what? My life has no good fruit, and my life stinks, and I'm never going to become anything or do anything, and I have good reason. It's not my fault, all these other people. I am a victim, and that's why I'll never be anything. He could have just given up on life and his future and the Lord, and had justified excuses for it. You guys with me? But he wouldn't do it. He's like, I'm not buying that narrative. I am not a victim. I'm a blessed man. God's hand of favor is on me, because there was more to the story than the bad stuff that people were doing to him. There's other things that were happening during the same time period, like God giving him success everywhere he went and causing him to be treated well. God causing him to rise to the top every single place that he went. So he's in the prison, and he's there, and his job is to serve other prisoners. So he just starts serving them. God's hand of favor is on him. And the head prison guy says, hey, man, I'm going to put him in charge of everything in the prison, right? It's like he can't keep a blessed man down. And so, again, he's blessed. And anyway, what ends up happening, there are two other prisoners who are there, and they have dreams from God. And they're talking about their dreams. They don't know what they mean. And Joseph hears them, and God gives Joseph the interpretation of their dreams. And he says, oh, I'll tell you what your dreams are. Your dream means that, and he interprets it for him. He says, basically, in 3 days, you're going to be restored back to Pharaoh in his service. You're going to be out of prison, back in the service of Pharaoh. So it's like, woohoo, good dream, good interpretation. I like this. So the second guy's like, what, my dream? What does it mean? Joseph interprets his dream. In 3 days, you're going to die. You're going to be put to death for your crimes. He's like, oh, 3 days go by. Exactly what he said would happen happens to both. The dream, the prophecy was fulfilled. And then Joseph was like, hey, when you get back to the guy who was still alive, going back to serve Pharaoh, he's like, hey, can you tell Pharaoh about me? I'm here. It's an injustice. I was falsely accused. Like, I'm innocent, right? But the guy gets there, and he forgets about Joseph, and he doesn't say anything to Pharaoh. Till a time goes by, and then guess what? God knows where you're at. And he knows how to get you from where you are to where he wants you to be. And when it was God's time, Joseph's character had been tested and forged and fortified and proven. God gives Pharaoh, the head of all Egypt, probably the most powerful nation in the world at that time, gives him dreams. And Pharaoh's troubled by the dreams. He's like, I know these dreams are from God. I don't know what they mean, though. And he's troubled by it. He's disturbed. And none of his wise men can tell him what the dream means because none of them know God. And then the guy who's serving him, who was in prison, who had his dream interpreted, says, oh, yeah, I forgot. There's a guy in prison who I had these dreams. And anyway, he's good at this. So Pharaoh calls him up there, and Joseph is standing before Pharaoh. Pharaoh tells him the dreams. Joseph interprets the dreams. He says, oh, this is what they mean. God helps him do it. And then Pharaoh says, you know what? I'm going to promote you. You're going to be the second most powerful man in all of Egypt. Next to me, you're number two in power. I mean, how about that? He's not even Egyptian. He's Jewish. Like, he's not even from Egypt. He's a foreigner living as a foreigner in their land because he's a slave who was, like, worse than a slave. He's a slave who was accused of a formal crime against his master and was put in prison for it. Number two, just like that. So Joseph is there. Again, God's hand of favor is on him. So you know what? Now he's in charge of all this stuff over the nation of Egypt, and God blesses the entire nation, everything that's under his Joseph's care. Pharaoh's like, I love this guy. It's like, my nation's being totally blessed by your God because of you. I really like you. So some years go by. Joseph is prospering. He's wealthy. He's blessed. He's got. He's married. He's got children. And now we're going to pick up the story in Genesis 41, 50 through 52. It says, now two sons were born to Joseph before the years of famine came. Whom, that's his wife's name, whatever that is, Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. Joseph, listen, this is the key. I want you to get this. Pay attention to the names of his two children. I'm going to talk about these in a second. Joseph named the firstborn Manasseh, which means it's causing to forget. For he said, listen, God has made me forget all my trouble and hardship and all the sorrow of the loss of my father's household. He named the second Ephraim. Listen to the name. Fruitfulness. For God has caused me to be fruitful and very successful. Listen to this. In the land of my suffering. How about that? I believe this shows us, like, God's two-step process, so to speak, of how he heals us from the wounds of our past. Because we're not victims. See, when you buy into the I am a victim narrative over your life, what ends up happening is you define yourself by the bad stuff that's happened to you. But when you reject that narrative, and you fill in the rest of the story of God's goodness, and you say, I am blessed. You're not saying nothing bad ever happened to me. You're like, no, something bad happened, but something better happened. God was with me. God came into my life. God rescued me. God redeemed me. God saved me. He's using it for his good. He's using it for his glory, and I'm more blessed. I'm more blessed than I've ever been. And what you do when you agree with God's narrative, you declare God's goodness is what defines your life. Not you can tell. Listen, you meet new people and you start talking to them, you can tell how they define their life. A lot of times you'll talk to somebody, and I talk to people all the time. I just meet people and knock on their doors. I meet whoever. And usually, oftentimes, you know, within just a little bit of the conversation starting, they're spouting off, oh, yeah, that person, you know what they did to me? Oh, I hate my dad. You know what my, yeah, if, and why do you hate your dad? Well, you know what he did? Right, I hate fill in the blank. Why? And they just spout off their victimization story. And it's not making, I'm not making light of that. I mean, some of that is real and it's wrong and it's painful. I get that. But what they've done, though, is their life in their mind, when they think of their life, it's defined by the bad things that have happened to them. That's why as soon as they start talking about their life, they just first they start talking about the bad stuff that's happened. But somebody who's been redeemed and is bought into God's narrative on their life, you start talking to them, and they're just, within just a little bit of time, they're testifying. They're talking about the goodness of God. They're telling you some story about his faithfulness. Well, this happened to me, but the Lord, and fill in the blank. Then this happened to me, but the Lord. And this happened to me, but the Lord used it for his glory. I'm so thankful. And who do you want to be? Do you want to be the bitter old person who's got story after story about, well, this is why I'm bitter. It's not my fault. I'm a victim. Or do you want to be the sweet old person who's alive and filled with joy and gratitude, talking about the goodness of God? And somebody who may know your story, and they're not used to looking at the life through the good lens of God's goodness, they'd be like, hey, why are you so happy? Let me remind you what's happened to you. You shouldn't be so happy. You shouldn't be so nice to those people. Do you remember? Let me tell you what they did to you again. It's like, no, I remember what they did to me, but I know that God is good. And they don't have that much power to have the final word over my life. I'm not agreeing with that narrative. God is good. He has the final say on my life. And whatever they meant for evil, or the devil meant for evil, God is so much more powerful. He will turn it and flip it for my good. And I'm going to praise him for it. Amen? And this is what Joseph's doing. And he memorializes these truths in the naming of his first sons. The first one comes and he's like, phase one of the process of God healing your soul. You know you're healed when you're like, God has made me forget all my trouble and hardship. Manasseh. God heals us so that we're no longer, it's not that we don't remember what happened to us. We remember. It's just that when those memories come up, it's not the only part of the story we remember. We also remember. See, I imagine I'm putting myself in Joseph's shoes. I imagine he's talking to his wife because she's never met his brothers or his family. She's from Egypt. He's like, yeah, I grew up and my brothers did this to me. She's like, man, that must have been awful. He's like, yeah, but you know what? He's like, it was the strangest thing. It's like, I was in Potiphar's house. I was so scared, but God was with me. And you know what? I was so tempted to just be given over to hatred, but God just wouldn't let me go there. And he helped me overcome and to be able to forgive. And no matter what I did, even though I was like, it was a new land, a new place, everything was new to me. I didn't exactly know what I was doing, but God gave me favor. And it just didn't matter. Whatever I touched, he blew his blessing on it and gave me favor. It's like, God's been with me. And she's like, man, listen to you talk about your story. You're not majoring on the bad stuff. You're majoring on the goodness and faithfulness of God in the midst of the bad stuff. You guys with me? And when you have perspective, God's perspective, there's so much more to the bad stuff that happened to you than the bad stuff that happened to you. That season of your life, God's goodness was there. And he's like, it's not that I don't remember anymore the bad stuff. He goes, but when I think about it, it's no longer a tormenting memory because I see it through the lens of the faithfulness and the goodness of God. And then the second one, Ephraim, God has made me fruitful. This is phase two of the healing process. And it's like, you know what? God was good to me. He was with me and he is blessing me. Even in the midst of it, he didn't do the bad stuff to me, but he was like, even when the devil and other people were doing bad stuff, he was there helping me. And then he says, but you know what? It's not just that. It's like, look at me now. He's like, I'm from a family of shepherds that didn't even have a homeland. We lived in tents. We lived in tents. We didn't even have a homeland. I'm just a shepherd boy. I'm not even the firstborn son or the second or even close to it. I'm like way down the family line in my own family. And now I'm the second most powerful guy in Egypt. The Lord's blessed me. He's made me fruitful. I have a family. I was sold as a slave. I was good as dead, but I'm married and I have children and he's made me fruitful. The Lord has blessed me. And he's able to see the blessing of the Lord that's in his life. And that's what he says with Ephraim. Is this making sense? Okay, let me just say this, and I'm going to read one last part, and then we're going to worship. This is huge, guys, because listen, all of us could get up here and tell our stories. All of us have bad things that have happened to us. All of us have things that happen that we're like, where was God in that? Like, why did he let that happen? He could have stopped that. Why didn't he? Why did that person do that to me? Why did that situation happen to me? I don't feel like I deserved it. Or maybe it's worse. It's like, I deserve to be punished. I don't deserve to be blessed because I know I'm bad and I did horrible things to people and I can't forgive myself and on and on and on. And it's like, that defines your life. And it's, all of us have those things, guys. Jesus says, just expect it. Now, I'm not talking about like living God, I'm believing you for troubles. I'm not talking about that. But Jesus said, guys, this is Jesus said to his own disciples, in this world, you will have many trials. But take heart, I have overcome the world. I remember if I wanted to, I am so blessed. I was having a conversation with a friend earlier this week. We were talking, and somehow we just got talking about our families and our childhood. It's a good friend of mine. And he was asking me questions about my life, and I was like, yeah, you know, my parents were divorced when I was six, and I still vividly remember the divorce. It's funny, I'm 44 now, but I can clearly remember that time of my life. I can remember my 4-year-old brother and I was the oldest, I was six. My dad having us, we were sitting down in a chair. We both fit in one chair because you're a 2-little 6-year-old butt and a 4-year-old butt can fit in a big person chair. So we were sitting there, it was like this mustard yellow chair, and we're just sitting there, and my dad's like kneeling down, looking at us in the eye, my mom's standing to the side. And he breaks the news for the first time, which was total shock to us. And he's like, well, you know, your mama and I won't be here living together anymore. And you're going to have to live with one of us. But you'll get to visit, you know, all this whatever they said. And I remember, like, I just remember it feeling, you know, my little 6-year-old head. I didn't really know all of what that would mean. But I could feel. And I'm like, something scary. And they ended up getting divorced. And it was a scary season. And the devil came in, because the devil oftentimes, he tries to look for opportune moments to take advantage of people, especially children. And in that moment where my daddy's out of the home, my mom got custody. And my mom loves me. My dad loves me. They're amazing parents. But, you know, only one could get custody. They both wanted it, but only one could. And so, you know, I get that, and I love them both. I totally love both my mom and my dad. I honor them. And we're living with my mom. We move into a new part of town, lived in Portland, Oregon. And this new part of town, you know, we live in this apartment complex, and there were some really bad things that happened in that season. That's when a stronghold of fear came into my life, was in that season. Because I remember this, you know, my dad, who makes me feel safe, is not there anymore. And I remember, like, we're in this new neighborhood, and somebody a few blocks away had got murdered. And then somebody in our own apartment complex got murdered. And I remember just this fear came in. Like, there's somebody waiting around the corner, hiding under my bed, whatever it is, who wants to kill me and murder me. And I had a spirit of fear in that area, all the way until I was like first married and God delivered me from it. And I, you know, just all this stuff. I remember growing up and like And my dad tried, you know, he really is a good dad. Like, he loves me a lot. But, you know, it wasn't his fault that, you know, my mom remarried. And which is, I was thankful for that. I love my stepdad. He was a blessing to me, actually. And, but he was in the military and we moved away. So I only got to see my dad once a year and for maybe a few weeks in the summertime. And I loved seeing my dad, but I remember, like, it was so hard. It was like every year it seemed like growing up. I just had these memories of this extreme pain saying goodbye to my dad at the end of the two-week visit in the summer. And as we're getting onto the plane, because we had to fly back home, I remember just getting onto the plane with my little brother and just sitting there and just crying and crying and crying, you know, just missing my dad because I'm not going to see him for another year. And it's like all this stuff, right? But I'll tell you the truth. I mean, I could just tell you those parts of the story. But to tell you the truth, when I look back on my childhood, I actually have really good memories. There were a lot of good things that were happening in my life. Even though I didn't even know Jesus back then. I did not know the Lord back then. But God's favor was on me. And God blessed me. And he would raise up people who just randomly liked me and would take me under their wing and let me hang out with their family. And just good men. Maybe not even were necessarily godly men, but just good men, you know, who would like teach me how to play baseball or whatever it was, you know. And I would just have fun and I'd get to go on. I didn't get to hardly ever go on family vacations with my family, but there were other people who would like take me with them on their little vacations. So it's like the goodness of God was, now I look back and I see, wow, I wasn't noticing it then, but look at the goodness of God is all over me. I could see different times where I almost died or when people had probably really bad plans, something really awful could have happened to me, but the Lord protected me. And I'm like, wow, that was the Lord protecting me. And I didn't even acknowledge him or know that he was doing that. And I see his goodness. And then I just see him leading me, caring for me, loving me. And he's like, and he blessed me. He's like, I'm going to make him really good at sports. Makes me good at sports. So I had lots of fun in sports, lots of success, lots of fun memories. Like, I loved it. But you know what? When I was in high school and some of my friends were like wanting to do drugs and get drunk and stuff like that, I was like, I really like sports and I want to be a professional athlete. And I know that would mess me up physically. So no, I don't. So I didn't even go into that scene. It's because, not because I love God, it's because I love sports and I wanted to be good at sports. But now I look at it, I'm like, that was the Lord. You know, I'm not a professional athlete. And, but you know what though? But God's like, it's okay. He doesn't know me yet. He doesn't love me yet, but I'll give him a love for this. And it'll help keep him out of some of those deep pits. God is good. God is faithful. And then I get saved at the age of 17, and God, the very first, like right away, God's like, he starts just over and over revealing himself as Father. He's like, I'm your Father. I will father you. And I distinctly remember I was weeping. I was about 3 years into knowing Jesus, and I had this prayer time where I was in my office. I was newly married. And I was just praying and I was weeping because I was lamenting over the fact that I didn't. I'm like, man, here I am, a new husband. I want to be good at this, but I don't really know what I'm doing. And I didn't have a good example growing up in my house. In fact, I had no good examples of good marriages growing up. And so I was like, the Hallmark type movies, what a good relationship looks like, but that's not very real. And so I'm like, God help me. Like, how do I do this? I want to be good at this. And I'm like, I don't want to fail. And then I was actually crying in my office. I'm like, God, it's not right that I don't have a godly father with me to be able to teach me how to be a good husband and how to be a godly man. And I keep having to figure this out by myself. And all of a sudden, this super powerful presence of God just like enveloped me and went through me all at the same time, like in a moment. This power, this energized love. And he spoke to me instantly and he says, I'll father you. And you know how God, he can speak like, you know, three or four words, but he means a whole lot more by those three or four words. And you instantly know the paragraphs of what he's saying in the three, you know what I'm saying? And I knew what he meant. He's like, I joyfully embrace the responsibility of teaching you how to be a great, I'll father you. You'll be the best fathered child that there's ever been because I got the best dad. Come on. I got the best dad there's ever been. He's like, I'm going to teach you how to be a great husband. You're going to be a great son. You're going to be an awesome father. And he's like, I'm going to make you so fruitful. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to care for you. I'm going to provide for you. I'm going to train you. I'm going to correct you when you need correcting. I'm going to affirm you when you need affirming. I'm going to speak identity and purpose into you. I'm going to tell you how I made you and what's awesome about you. And I'm going to protect you. I'm going to help you. And it just, I knew all that. And I was just like, oh God. And I'm going to tell you, 20 something years later, the Lord has kept his promise. He's blessed me. I feel like Joseph. Like I read this passage and I'm like, God, look at me. I'm so blessed. I love Jesus. I know the Father. I don't have an orphan spirit anymore. I know God is Father. I have a great relationship with my dad. I love my dad. I love my mom. I have a great marriage. I have a wife that loves me. She's a godly wife. I love my wife like crazy. Like we've been married 23 years. Is that right? 19. 23 and a half years now. And I am so in love. And my wife is in love with me. I'm like, this is so cool. I actually have a marriage. I didn't know how to do it. That's cool. But God's like, I'll help you. And he helps her. I have the most amazing kids. I have the most amazing kids. My sons and my daughter love Jesus. And they love me. And I'm not a perfect dad, but I am a good dad by the grace of God. And I feel close to my kids. I'm like, God, thank you. This is such a gift. And all this comes from you. I don't deserve any of this. This is all a gift. And I feel like Joseph. Joseph's just sitting back and he's like, man, what do I have to complain about? Look at me. I'm blessed. He's made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. In the very area where the enemy could have come in and made me a victim, said, this is your story. God flipped it. And now part of my story is I'm a well-fathered son. Then in Genesis 50, just say this really quick and I'm going to end. In Genesis 50, a little bit of time goes by. Joseph's the most powerful guy in Egypt. There's a severe famine in like the nations, the whole region. And there's like no food. For years, there's famine. There is no food in the land except in Egypt. And they had tons of food, tons of surplus. And Joseph's in charge of it all, and he's in charge of who gets it. He's like in charge of the food. How many of you know when there is no food in the land, and it's like people are either going to starve or they have to go to you and get food from you, they're going to want to make you like them. You guys with me? Joseph had so much favor, but he had a good heart, and he's there, and all of a sudden, guess what happens? His brothers show up. And they don't recognize him at first, but they come up and they bow before him, just like his dream when he is a teenager. And they're asking him, we're your servants. Can you give us some food? He recognizes them, but they don't recognize him yet. And he's like, well, ain't that interesting? Now look who's in the position of power, boys. See, you were in the position of power before. You were bigger. You were stronger. There were more of you. And you treated me like trash. But, oh, look at what we got here. He could have had him put to death. But look how he treats him. It says when Joseph, eventually they realize he tells them, it's me, Joseph. Now they're freaked out. Now they're like, oh no, like you're alive and you're powerful and you could kill us. And they know it. They're like, oh, this is bad. And they know they're guilty of their sin. They're like, it's God punishing us because of what we did to him. And they totally are actually saying these things. And they're so scared. And they're like, hey, remember your dad? You like him, right? He didn't do anything bad to you. He wouldn't want you to hurt us at all. Like, remember, honor your father, like, love him, be nice to us. And they're thinking, like, maybe he's being nice to us because of dad, right? But then dad dies. And now they're like, uh-oh. because dad's dead now. So now it's payback time. He's going to get us. And they come to him, and it says, when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, what if Joseph carries a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong which we did to him? So they sent word to Joseph saying, your father commanded us before he died, saying, you are to say to Joseph, I beg you, please forgive the transgression of your brothers and their sin, for they did you wrong. It's like, it was dad's dying wish, Joseph, come on. Now, please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father. I love this. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers went and fell down before him in confession. Then they said, behold, we are your servants, slaves. But Joseph said to them, listen to this, do not be afraid. For am I in the place of God? Vengeance is his, not mine. As for you, you meant evil against me. Here it is. But God meant it for good. I am no victim. I am blessed. I am redeemed. But God meant it for good in order to bring about this present outcome. He's like, this is so blessed. That many people would be kept alive as they are this day. Because he knew it wasn't even about him. He wasn't even just talking about like, yeah, but God meant it for good because he wanted to get me into a place where I'd be even more blessed. Look, I'm so happy. He's like, no, it's not about me. He's like, God knew that there was going to be this famine that was coming in the land, and he wanted to get one of his own covenant sons into a position where he had the food so that the covenant line, all of you guys, my brothers and your children, would not starve to death, but that I would be able to help make sure that you have food and take care of you so the covenant line would go on and God would fulfill his promises. He's like, this isn't just about me. This is about the promises of God. It's about the purposes of God. It's about the calling over our family. It's about the calling over the nations of the earth. He's like, God had a purpose, and what you meant for evil, God meant it for good. And then he said this, verse 21. So now, I love this. Listen to the man of power, how he uses his power. He comforts them. Do not be afraid. Listen, I will. It's like, this is a power statement. He's like, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. He's like, I will provide for you. I will support you and your little ones. So he comforted them, giving them encouragement and hope. And he spoke with kindness to their hearts. See, here's how it is. When we buy into God's narrative for our life, my life is not defined, I'm not a victim. It's not defined by my pain and the bad things. My life is defined by the goodness of God and his redemption. Then what happens is a healed heart is anointed to encourage, love, and generously bless other people. So if you will respond rightly in trials, God will heal your heart. He'll give you a place of spiritual authority that you can actually bless others, even your enemies. Do you know what's crazy? The kid who grew up without his dad around, the kid who grew up in a broken home, do you know how many people that God's used me as a spiritual father in their life? Not even my own kids. This happens regularly. I go to Italy. I go to wherever. Minister in some other place around the state or some other. This frequently is a common thing that happens. I found out that these people who were raised in broken homes like me, they're all over the place. And they need hope. Hey, your life ain't defined by that. You can grow up and have the greatest marriage. Yeah, but I never had a dad to teach me, or my dad was a bad person. He abused me. It's like, no, that's not going to define you. God will be your father if you'll follow Jesus. God will be your father, and you're going to be the greatest dad, the greatest husband. You can have the greatest marriage. Anybody who meets you in your 40s would guess, if they didn't know your past, they'd just say, you must have been raised in the best, healthiest Christian family that's ever been imagined. Because how could you have turned out so strong and so blessed and so healthy? The goodness of God. That's why. So I'm going to have Chad come up. I want to worship.